irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. And for those of you that are listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much. And please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now, I want to really send out my appreciation for those of you that have sent our shows out to other people that you know within their social media. And please continue to do that. If you know somebody who can benefit from a particular show, please send it out to them as well as to your social media group. I guarantee you it will help us reach more people, and we greatly appreciate it. Now, Answers for the Family will continue to address a variety of issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and creating greater health, happiness, and so much more for you and your family. Now, we'll introduce you to talented authors and new innovations in the areas of health, security, and fun for you and your family. Now, our topic today is a little different than what many of you have heard in the past. The title is also the new book, Timeless, A Paranormal Personal History. Now, paranormal is usually defined as something beyond the range of normal experience or scientific explanation. Now, parapsychologists who aren't deterred by skeptics calling their discipline of parapsychology a pseudoscience have successfully studied many paranormal phenomena, including telepathy, precognition, clairvoyance, psychokinesis, near-death experiences, and reincarnation. Now, the author of this book is also our guest. It is Bruce Olav Solheim, and he was born to hardworking Norwegian immigrant parents, and he was the first person in his family to go to college. He earned his PhD in history from Bowling Green State University and is currently a distinguished professor of history at Citrus College in Glendora, California. And Bruce founded the Veterans Program at Citrus College, and he co-founded with Manuel Martinez and Ginger De Bella Rose the Boots to Books Transition Program, which is the first college course that I'm aware of in the United States designed specifically for recently returned veterans. Now, Bruce has published 5 books, and he's written 7 plays, 2 of which have been produced. He is married to Ginger, who he refers to as the girl of his dreams, and he's been blessed with 4 children, Bjorn, Byron, Caitlin, and Leif. Bruce, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Well, thank you very much, Alan. I'm glad to be here on your program. It sounds like a great program. I love what you're doing.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, I had a chance to go through your book, and you talk about a lot of personal experiences. And, you know, I did a little bit of research, and I mean, I've been told that, you know, professional academic people are afraid that they're going to destroy their reputation or even their career by even considering that there's such a thing as paranormal activity. So what prompted you to go and write a book about it?
Well, you know, you're right. There's a lot of professional people and academics, people in the academic world who believe and have had experiences in the paranormal, but are afraid to say anything about it for, you know, and for the same reason that I was for so many years. I thought I wouldn't be taken seriously, that I'd be mocked, or, you know, or they'd find a way to, you know, get me to retire early or something. But what really, and I've had these experiences my whole life, so it's not like it's something new to me. But about 2 years ago, a dear friend of mine, family friend, we had grown up together in the Norwegian American community in Seattle. He passed away from cancer, and about a month after he passed, I had a very clear vision of him, which was not unusual for me to have visions. I've had these throughout my life, but in that vision, he encouraged me to reach out to people with what he was showing me and telling me, and also what has happened to me. Okay. And he said, it's okay, that the time has come to do it. So here I am. And he even gave me the title. So timeless.
Wow. Okay. So that would be your most recent, or is that your most recent paranormal experience?
No, I continue to have them. And actually, since the book was published in August, I think, or July, I don't know, time flies, it seems like, but, I continue to have these experiences, and I've also developed a way to instead of having, you know, cause paranormal things like people who have passed on speaking to me or showing me things, that's been going on my whole life, but it's always been, random, you know, it's never been, it's been frequent, but random. So what I figured out is a way to communicate, and I can do so on a regular basis, and very carefully, of course, because there's a lot of hidden dangers in this kind of stuff, and you know, in a very grounded way, you know. So mm-hmm. I continue to have these experiences, you know, every week. So, one way or another,
if you have it frequently, it. Mm-hmm. It's probably something, I guess, that you've grown to deal with. But was there a time in which it was very scary for you? And if so, what scared you the most?
Well, I think I've had some very frightening experiences, but it started at age 4. I had an angelic experience, so that was a very positive experience. And I've had some rather negative ones too that have made me very, very cautious about this, you know, what I would call, or many would call, the spirit world. And I grew up in a Norwegian Lutheran home, you know, went to Sunday school, did all the things that everybody in our community did. And but at the same time, all that was going on, there was these experiences I was having, you know, whether it was that original angelic experience at age 4, which happened in Norway, or going to a funeral and having the person in the, the person in the coffin speak to me. So, and I would turn to my mother and I would talk to her, because she was very psychically aware. I'm not going to say she was a psychic, but she was very psychically aware. And she would help me kind of understand these things. So I think there's a genetic component to it as well. But it's really that experience at age 4 that opened up the floodgates. And from that point on, I've just continued to have these experiences, and some good, some not so good. And probably the most frightening are the demonic ones. And that's where I would caution listeners who are, you know, interested in this part of their, because I think everybody has this part of them. They just maybe haven't cultivated it. Some have more than others, but they have to proceed with extreme caution, because there are some very negative things out there. And then there are people that are on a very strange, you know, negative path as well, and you have to be cautious of those folks.
You know, when you were mentioning about sitting at the funeral and the mm-hmm. person from the coffin spoke to you, and you said you turned to your mother, I thought you were going to say you turned to your mother and said, "Did you hear that too?"
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I asked her that, but I looked at her and she kind of nodded at me. So, and I didn't tell her at that point that I heard him, because I wasn't quite sure what to make of it. And I'm not going to say it was frightening, but it sure was shocking and very curious. But he was so assured in his voice. You know, he's this old Norwegian man who I had known my whole life. And he spoke in a very, in his accent, his heavy Norwegian accent, and said, "There's nothing to be afraid of. You know, don't worry. I'm okay." You know, and so So in that way, I wasn't afraid, but I was still, you know, it was shocking nonetheless.
Did you feel that he was talking to you or to anyone present that could hear him?
Well, I took it as a personal thing, but because I couldn't acknowledge it with anybody else, I don't know if anybody else heard it. But I took it as, you know, that he was probably speaking to me, although I don't remember him necessarily mentioning my name, you know, calling me out by name. But I think folks who have passed on and are speaking from the spirit world are very much, I'm not going to say desperate to speak to people, but they would really, a lot of them would really like to reach out. So whoever is listening, I think is once they get your attention, I think that's what they're looking for, is to pass on a message maybe to their loved ones that they left behind or something. And that's usually what I have found in the experience I've had with dealing with this. They usually have a message for their loved ones. And I've actually had people ask me, living people say, could you try to get a hold of my father? And I will try, and it doesn't always work, but if I'm in the right zone, I guess, or in the right, I guess scientists would call it the alpha brainwave state of meditation, then I'm able to get some information, and sometimes some very specific information that wouldn't be gathered that could not be gathered from any other source. So I kind of see it as it is a gift. I do believe in God, and I think this is a gift, and it's to be used wisely. It's to be used only to help people. And so it's come to this. I think my whole life, the trajectory of my life, the arc of my life, if you put it in story terms, has come to this point. I've helped people, veterans and their families and young students and raised four children and now I have a grandchild. So all of that is very important and necessary stuff. But at the whole time, this has been kind of on the back burner, and now I'm finally bringing it out and dealing with it in a very positive way. And I'm not afraid of doing it because I'm nearing retirement, so I'm not too worried about the college saying anything. But actually, the reaction's been very good.
Well, that's good. As you were saying that, I was thinking, I think that, many of us have gifts, we have tools or talents, and mm-hmm. and it's important that we use them, for the right reasons, so that we use them essentially for good. I think it would be safe to say that there are charlatans out there that are making claim to what it is that they can do in regards to speaking with people from beyond and such. Mm-hmm. How do you feel that there's a way in which somebody can determine who's for real and who's a charlatan in those situations? What would you say to somebody that says, I've been going to, XYZ person, periodically, and they've told me lots of things that lead me to believe that they're speaking to some of my loved ones that have passed, but now they're looking for more of an investment. The people in the past are telling me I should invest in whatever it is. But how would you?
Yeah, I think.
What would you?
Yeah,
say?
No, I understand what you're saying, and there are charlatans, and then there are some very genuine people out there. And what the percentage is, I couldn't tell you, but I think if it just seems too good to be true, or it just seems a little off, and there is a lot of money involved, there's probably something wrong, because people who truly are gifted in this way would want to help people, and that's their dedication. Not that they aren't allowed to make a living. There are people that do that. I just do it for friends and people who ask me. So I'm not in the business of doing mediumship or whatever, but. I think that it's just something that I like to do to help people. And it is a form of healing too. People are grieving and so forth. But I think a sure sign, if it just doesn't seem right, and also the other sure sign that something is wrong is if they claim to be nearly 100% accurate on everything, or if they do a lot of, what they call cold reading techniques, by getting you to give them the information, that kind of stuff. There's some tricks that people do and that are charlatans, and those are pretty easy to see through. But probably the biggest one is just trust your instincts, because all of us have, if we really think about it, we have pretty good instincts about somebody that it just doesn't seem right. But definitely the number one marker is if they say that they're extremely accurate, because even the best at doing this kind of stuff that have been doing it for years that have shown to been very accurate are looking at maybe half of the time they can make a contact and maybe half of the time they can get some information. So, and the fact that they can get anything is pretty amazing in and of itself. And it kind of speaks to what people expect. Expectations are kind of based on the Hollywood perception of this kind of stuff, the paranormal or psi abilities are kind of driven by, you know, Harry Potter and stuff like that, where you expect, you know, you're going to, you know, shoot lightning bolts out of a, out of your fingers or whatever or something. And it's every, this stuff is much more organic. It's much more subtle. And I think that's where people are, you know, kind of mistaken. But that the number one clue is if they claim to be infallible, or that, you know, they have this incredible accuracy rate or whatever. And if there's a large sum of money involved too, that's very suspicious.
You mean you don't shoot lightning bolts? I'm kind of disappointed.
No, not really.
Now, you mentioned when you talked about the person that you spoke to that was also the one that led you to write this book. You talked about the word timeless. You said that that word was given by them. Why do you believe that we are all timeless?
Well, I think I'll start with, you know, my upbringing, this idea that, you know, that I was taught that, you know, if you lead a good life and there's the, you know, the life everlasting, you know, that you go to heaven and this kind of stuff. So I grew up with that concept. And then before I had this experience with Gene, I've had a couple of visits from my mother who passed away in 1990. And she told me directly, you know, there is a heaven. You know, she didn't give me a lot of details, but, you know, she did say there is a heaven. It's not only that, believe it, I've had, the experience of talking to those that have passed on, and Gene in particular answered a lot of questions that I had about, well, for one thing, I asked him what probably most people would, if you're all of a sudden the person that has passed away comes to you. And I said, what's it like? You know, what is it like in the spirit world or the hereafter, or what's it like to be dead? I think that's the way I asked it. And he said, well, it's funny you should say, because I don't really feel dead. I feel like I just am. There is no future. There's no past. We just exist. And everything is beautiful. Everything is, well, he said, and a lot of people have said this, but I think it's very true based on what I've been told, is that it's all about love. And it really comes down to that simple, you know, that simple fact. I get very emotional when I think about it. But,
yeah. Sure. So when you're saying that we are,
yeah,
you know, and you're talking about timeless. So is he, I mean, in essence, is he saying that, when he's saying we, is he suggesting that he is interacting with others within his same world?
I developed a kind of a model for what I understand based on all the questions and answers that the questions I've had and the answers he's given. And what I've come up with is that, you know, once you enter this spirit world, I mean, we all are part spirit and part the physical body that we have. So this physical body may, you know, pass and may die, but your spirit lives forever. It's timeless. And the other interesting thing is that what I learned is that people come back in different, in, you know, either reincarnated, or they come back to live their life from the point of near death sometimes. And this is what I call the forks in the road of time, where you can have an experience where in one dimension you died. Let's say it's a terrible car accident, but in another dimension you live on as if it didn't happen. And but the spirit carries with you in all these different forks that you may encounter in your life. And I think I've gone through probably about, oh, I don't know, at least a dozen of these forks in the road of time. In fact, I had one recently, about 3 months ago. I'll tell you what happened. It was here in Southern California. My son, my youngest son, and I were driving, and we went through an intersection, and I just looked down momentarily. I mean, just a split second, and I looked up, and the light was red, and I was running a red light at about 50 miles an hour, 45, whatever. And there were two cars, one on either side, coming right at us. They were about to T-bone us from either side, you know, like squish us in between. And all of a sudden, time slowed down. It completely slowed down. And I looked at the situation, and I was able to make a maneuver in this slowed down time to get out of the situation. And I got to the other side of the intersection, and everything came back, you know, normal speed. And I asked myself, how did this happen? And I believe what happens is that is an example of a fork in the road of time, where in another split second in that dimension, we may have been in a horrible car accident. And I assume it would have been bad for us and for the two, you know, other cars, mm-hmm. and their passengers. But, you know, we were fine. And so I think that's part of what I mean by being timeless, is that we just, in that split second, we fork off and you know, on a different fork, and we continue on. And sometimes we have, you know, memories of these things, sometimes not. I remember as a kid, and it's an odd thing for a little kid to think, but I used to think, I wonder if I've already died and now I'm somebody else, and it's a very odd thing, but I remember thinking this. I wonder if I've already died and now I'm somebody else, and I don't even, you know, I don't really know who that somebody else was before me. And it was a very weird feeling. And I guess I might have been a strange child, because I also I felt very comfortable in graveyards when I was little. I used to take my friends to the local graveyard, is about a mile away, and we would ride our bikes there and have lunch there. And I always felt very comfortable. It never, you know, my friends would be kind of spooked by it, but it never bothered me. So I think I've always had kind of probably because of that first experience at age four, I just have never been uncomfortable around, you know, death or any of that. You know, it's not that I didn't fear death, that, you know, for a very long time, but it's that I wasn't uncomfortable in those situations.
You know,
I kind of rambled there. Sorry.
No. It's great. No, it was, it actually made me think of, I mean, as I was reading through your book last week, and I do this often at the gym, so I get my exercise in as well. And one of the people at the gym that knows me, and they, you know, they know what I'm doing usually there, because I'm in the same place just about every day. And so, but they said, you know, so, you know, what's your show about? And so I told them a little about the show. And their question, when they said it, I thought, you know, that's probably a lot of people's question when I was explaining to them a little bit about, you know, about what I was reading. And they said, well, so if he was talking to somebody in that world, did he ask them, are all the people there good? You know, so it's that thing that all of us were raised, especially those mm-hmm. that raised Christian faith, you know, mm-hmm. when they're there, you know, are they all good, or are there still bad people there? Anyway, that was the question that they said, sort of with an interesting look on their face.
Yeah, no, I know that look too. Believe me, I've seen that look before. I know what you're talking about. Well, I did ask, and that is a very good question. It's one of the questions I asked Gene. And there's also a what I call a spirit helper, another friend of mine who passed away 3 years ago named Maya. She was a fellow teacher where I teach. And anyway, I asked them both. I said, well, what about the bad people? You know, what happened? Are they with you guys? And they said, well, what they said is that there are some entities in the spirit world that are not, have never been human, and they're very bad, you know, the demonic stuff. And he said that they are, you know, there's kind of, there's different, it's not all the same. You know, it's not like they're all in the same neighborhood. So there are places where those people go, and maybe that could be called hell. I don't know. They didn't mention that specifically. But what they did say is that there is still hope for them, but they're going to have to work very, very hard. And I've heard other people say they might have to come back in physical form, maybe another 100 times to you know, to get it right. And that's what they told me, and that's the sense that I have too, is that I know there's bad things out there, and I have encountered those things, and I don't think they get off scot-free. I do think there is a price to be paid, but ultimately I think they do have a shot. Might be an outside shot, but otherwise they're going to be in a very bad place.
So, I mean, I guess one question is, I mean, how often do you have these, and are you able to control, you know, how well can you control what's going to happen at a time in which you might try to meditate or whatever to go into one of these experiences.
Well, in the case of the traffic, near traffic accident, of course, that just happened. So I just, it was a glimpse of what I call the paranormal world or the spirit world. And it's very similar. In fact, I've talked to my friends about this. It's very similar to what scientists, what we know as the quantum world, which is the world of the, you know, subatomic particles, which is very, very different than what our world that, you know, particle world that we see, that we have created actually on, in our physical existence. But anyway, I just lost track of what your question was. I'm sorry. I was starting to think of the quantum world, and I got sidetracked there. What was your question again? I'm sorry.
Well, it just, I think you kind of answered it, but it was just, you know, okay. Are you able to control it?
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. So, now if you're doing meditation, it's very important, for anybody who tries this, that they have to realize that, that there are bad things out there. So you have to, I pray every day, you know, a couple times a day. And, when I do these things, I say, okay, I'm opening up. I kind of make a nod to the old original Star Trek. I say, opening up all hailing frequencies to good and kind spirits. And then people usually, and I do have, what professional, you know, mediums would call gatekeepers. You know, these are people that are in the spirit world that are very good, that are kind of been watching over you. Some people might call them a guardian angel, which is another term for it, but you want them to help. Some people might just ask God, you know, that you could do that too. And just to help you so you can see through the things that are not good. And yes, you can. Well, you can control it to a certain extent. It's kind of like sometimes you get a connection, and sometimes it's just there's too many distractions going on. You know, like in my case, I do walking meditation. There might be there's truck horns and jackhammers going off, so maybe there's too much going on. But other times you get a very clear connection, and you can get some good information. Now it's not like, you know, the it's not like it is in Hollywood movies or whatever. It's very subtle. You'll hear, sometimes I hear a voice. Sometimes I see what I call golden handwriting in front of me. Sometimes I'll see like an image. People in the spirit world, oftentimes it's very difficult for them to reach out to us. It's very difficult for us to reach out to them. So sometimes they just use symbolic language. Like they'll show me something that has great significance. So then I know that that's somehow associated with them. And so you can control it to a certain extent, but it's not perfect. You know, I would never claim that it's perfect. It sometimes works, it sometimes doesn't, for various reasons. But there is some ability to control it with, but you have to be very cautious. I'll just put it that way.
Well, and I know you just mentioned about language, and I know that there is a variety of words that are used. There's different terminology. Mm-hmm. And I think I'll ask you to answer this when we come back from the break, but what are the differences of some of these terms? Because you have, you know, telepathy, precognition, clairvoyance, reincarnation, you know, there's a variety of different terms that I think a lot of people have heard, and there really are different definitions. So for everybody out there, stay with us. When we come back, we will hear some of the definitions of some of those terms. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. We are speaking with Dr. Bruce Olav Solheim, and we are talking about his new book, Timeless, A Paranormal Personal History. And so, Bruce, again, if we could go over some of the definitions of some of the terms, and let's start maybe with telepathy.
Okay, so telepathy is where you can non-verbally communicate with somebody using only your mind to send them, you know, either imagery or send them words that they can hear within their heads, you know, within in the inner ear, I guess, if you say it that way. So that is telepathy. The ability, like I'll give you an example. My mother and I would sometimes freak out my father when we'd go on camping trips to the Oregon coast, and we'd bring out a deck of cards, and my mom, because she was very psychic, would send me, using only her mind, the image of the card she was looking at. And we'd sit there for, you know, a couple seconds, and I'd say, oh, it's the Jack of Hearts. And oftentimes we'd be right. Not every time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we would get the right suit. Sometimes we'd get the right color. Sometimes exactly right. It was just enough to, we knew that it was beyond chance. It was well beyond chance that we were doing this. And it would freak my father out, because he was also an immigrant and a carpenter, blue collar, no nonsense guy, very practical. And he'd let us do it for a while, and then he would get upset and he'd say, okay, stop it. Okay, put it away. I don't like that. So my mom would just laugh, and yeah, we'd listen to him. We'd put it away. But so that's an example of telepathy, the ability to send a message to somebody without using, you know, without speaking or using sign language or something.
Right. But now that takes two people. What you're talking about now, it takes two people with, you know, we'll call it a gift. What about, and this is something that I have found myself that I have done, and I have to catch myself, but you know, I will, you know, we'll be in a meeting or whatever. And I did this one time with, of all things, an executive at a production company, at a television and movie production company. Mm-hmm. And I answered his question, and he looked at me, and I didn't ask that yet. I said it in my head, you know, but, and, right. and I started answering it, and I went, oh yeah, you didn't say, but I just, you know, and he just kind of looked at me like, you know, you're a little weird. But from that standpoint, but I think that is just one person, you know, it's still mm-hmm. telepathy, but it's just one person being able to pull. How does that work if the other people aren't necessarily intentionally sending?
Well, it could be a couple of things. It could also be something called precognition, where you knew something before it happened. You know, so before he spoke it, you know, there could be an element of that. It could be an element of telepathy where he was unintentionally thinking so loudly or so clearly that you picked up on it. It could also be clairvoyance, which is if you saw the you know, what he was going to say in your head or whatever, that would, you know, clairvoyance means clear vision. But usually it has to do with a non-living organism, like you see something far away, you know what's going on there, even though you couldn't possibly, thousands of miles away or something. But it sounds like kind of a combination, a little bit of telepathy, a little bit of precognition going on. Sometimes there are overlaps, I think.
So let's go to that one then. Give us kind of a better definition of precognition.
So precognition is where you know something in advance. I'll give you an example of precognition that I've had. The morning of 9/11, me and two other professors were at the Norfolk Naval Base, and we were devising a way to do distance education for the Navy, for a Navy contract, which eventually we did get a Navy contract. But we were talking to the folks at the Education Center, and then we were taking a tour of the base when suddenly the sirens went off and they shut the gates, and we knew something was wrong. So it was that morning of 9/11. And at that point, I remembered something that morning, and I had actually told my friends. When I woke up earlier that morning before all this happened, I had had a horrible nightmare where I woke up. I call it a vision, in this case, a precognitive vision of the entire world, like coming apart, like mountains were crumbling. I didn't see burning towers or, you know, that any of that kind of direct stuff. But I knew it was a complete disaster. You know, the earth was shaking. There was, you know, the mountains were crumbling, and I woke up in a cold sweat, and I told my friends at breakfast that this had happened. And then that was the morning of 9/11. Well, that in and of itself is kind of interesting. But then I found out, having read lots of books about precognition, about 9/11 in particular, there were people around the world who had a similar dream that morning before 9/11 happened, before the actual incident took place. So that would be an example of precognition. Now, some people had much clearer of it, like they saw buildings on fire, you know, that kind of thing. Some people saw airplanes, you know. So mine was more symbolic, like our world really did change as a result. And of course, the thing that the ground that we, you know, terra firma, was not sound. It was, you know, coming apart. And I think that's how I felt it, that what was going to happen. So I couldn't have, you know, called up, you know, the airports and said, watch out for these guys or whatever, because I didn't, that's not how it came to me. But that's an example of precognition, where you're going to know something before it happens. Often it's very symbolic.
So then explain then the difference of psychokinesis.
Psychokinesis is where you use your mind, or somebody else uses their mind, to move objects in the physical world, which in the laboratory, they've been doing these tests for many years, and they've actually shown that people can manipulate objects, but it's at what they call a micro PK, you know, at a micro level, very small movements, or the ability to influence a random number generator, for instance. They've shown this in the laboratory, that people can actually do this with their minds, which is amazing in and of itself. But it's not like sending, you know, chairs flying, you know, across the room at somebody, or hurtling, you know, cannonballs at your enemies or whatever, you know, with your mind or whatever. So it's not that dramatic. That's what they call macro PK. And that would be
that's what Hollywood
gives
us.
Rare. That's what Hollywood gives us. Not that it couldn't be conceivable, because if you can do micro PK, you might be able to do macro. But, you know, it's probably a good thing that most people can't do that. It's at a very small level. But even, and that is kind of, it's kind of discouraging for people who are kind of, have seen all the Hollywood movies, I teach a class, a paranormal class, which is kind of interesting in and of itself at the college where I'm at. But, you know, I had this scientist who's probably the leading scientist for psychic research in the world. He's in Northern California, Dr. Dean Radin. He was talking about micro PK, and he said that a lot of people are disappointed when they said, well, where's the proof? And you show them, you know, you can affect a random number generator, and people are like, they're not very impressed. You know, because they want to see like somebody hurdle a bus across, you know, the city or something, you know, that they've seen in a movie. And it's not likely. That is not the real world. And as he always says, you know, thank goodness that's not the way it is.
How many times
terrible things?
Yeah. How many times has he won the lottery? And is he one of the ones that won the $1.6 billion?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, because there are things that are easier to perceive. And if you talk to, here we slip into something called clairvoyance clear seeing, or it's also called remote viewing. And there was actually in 1995, they declassified our government's program on remote viewing, Operation Stargate. And I've talked, and actually Dean Radin was on that. He was one of the scientists on that project. And what they did is they'd psychically spy on the Russians. And there's certain things that are easier to perceive than other things. And numbers, you know, particular numbers in a sequence like the lotto and stuff like that is more difficult. And so there might be people who can do that, and maybe they are the people that are winning, you know, the lotto. I don't know. And if they are, I'm sure they're not going to tell anybody. And that's the way I would think about it. If I was able to do that, I don't think I would tell anybody, because you would have the world beating down your door wanting to, and you'd probably be kidnapped, and, you know, terrible things would probably happen to you if you came out and said, well, yes, I can predict the lotto numbers, or I can do this or that. And so I think that I think it's very difficult. Even the best remote viewers who have this remote viewing or clairvoyance, the figures that I've seen are somewhere like about 25% of the time they can get a connection. And about once they get a connection, maybe about 40% of the time they can get some accurate information. So it's not always, you know, you wouldn't want to bet $1 million on, you know, those kind of odds, or at least I wouldn't. I'm not a betting person anyway, but
no, me neither.
But that kind of explains it in real world terms, what, you know, what those different things are.
Now, why do you think that people might experience more or something different during what's called a near-death experience? Why would being near death, what does that change in our body or in our mind or our spirit that suggests that they're going to be able to see or do things differently?
Yeah, and there's also shared death experience, people who are at the deathbed or near a person that's dying, and there's also nearing death experience too, which is kind of interesting. And I'll just share the experience I had with my father, and maybe many of your listeners have had a loved one pass away or been at their bedside, but my father was in hospice care, and he was, you know, at that point he was probably a day or two away from passing away. And I noticed that he was staring kind of off into the distance, and he could still speak to me. And I said, "Dad, you're not looking at me. You know, who are you looking at?" And he said, "I'm looking at Mom." And I said, "Oh, okay. The picture of Mom? No, I'm looking at Mom." And then he was looking at his parents. So this is, and I talked to the hospice nurse. He was a very nice man. You know, these guys are angels, I'll tell you, these hospice people who work with the dying. I mean, I don't know how they can do it, but man, they are something else. And anyway, he said, "Oh, yeah, this is very common. They start seeing their relatives coming to them as they get closer to death. And at a certain point, they become comatose and then can't communicate anymore." So they're, but he said that this is very common, that they're either seeing angels or they're seeing their loved ones. And sometimes they see the living and can connect to them too, but that's a less pleasant experience apparently than seeing those that have passed on. It's kind of like they're getting ready to welcome them, and so that's called a nearing death experience. My experience with near death are these close calls, like for instance the angelic experience I had. I would, although I wasn't in a hospital room, I was very sick. What happened? I was in northern Norway, 200 miles above the Arctic Circle. I was age 4, and we were living with my grandmother on this remote island, and I got very sick. It was the winter time, and I came home, and I was barely able to walk home. I was very stiff. My body was getting very rigid, and I couldn't move my head. My neck was stiff, and I had a high fever, and I there's no hospitals nearby, so I just made it home. My grandmother had this little bed in the kitchen because she was always cooking, and she liked to take a rest, and it was too hard going up and down the steps for her. So she had me lie down in this little bed in the kitchen, and all the neighbors who were our relatives, because we're related to everybody on that island, showed up and said, you know, this is what happened to our nephew when he got polio. And this is what happened to Uncle Sven when he, you know, he got sick and the next day he died. They were just scaring the heck out of me and my mom and dad and my grandmother. And so I went to sleep, but I was very nervous and frightened that I was going to die. And then after a couple hours, I was by myself and I woke up and there was this bright light above me, very bright, very warm. And this figure, and I couldn't quite make it out. I call it an angelic figure. And at that moment, I felt this warmth come over me, and I felt like everything was going to be okay. All my worries were gone. All my cares were gone. It was like I was lifting up towards this light, and I went to sleep with no worries at all. And when I woke up early in the morning, I was completely fine. And I'm not exactly sure what I had. I explained this to someone once, and they said, "It sounds like you might have had meningitis, you know, which would be quite deadly without treatment and nowhere near a hospital. But I'm not sure what it was, but I woke up and I was completely fine. And then my grandmother and my mother said that that was my guardian angel that had saved me, spared me for whatever reason they had spared me. So I think that that was a point where I could have died and had this you know, miraculous experience, life-changing experience at age four. I mean, I just set it, like I said, opened the floodgates. And I've had a couple other, experiences like that, not like in a hospital kind of above floating above my body, but very similar type things that have happened to me that I associate with, a near-death experience.
Yeah, and it sounds like it's possible that because it happened to you at such an early age and you were open to it, it may have allowed you to remain more open to it to this day. And
I think you're right.
Yeah, we have a comment that's coming in. And again, I thank those that send us in comments or questions. Oh, nice. And this one comes in that says, what an exciting topic. It says, I participated in a study that was linked to Princeton, where we were taken into a lab and given a series of computer screens that asked us to turn and focus on a light inside a sealed case next to the computer. In four separate sessions, we were asked to randomly place our intention on the light becoming brighter, dimmer, mm-hmm. or no change. The results came back that every single participant significantly affected the light. I am excited to learn more about your work in areas like this, and order your book soon. This is from Bernice in San Francisco.
Oh, well, thank you, Bernice, for that question. And that experiment is a telekinesis type experiment where you are causing the, in other words, the brightness of the light to change. And that is something that has been shown in a laboratory, not only with random number generators, but also with lights and other things. I would highly recommend, if you haven't, if Bernice hasn't read it, any book by Dean Radin, and especially his new book, Real Magic. It's called Real Magic, and it sounds like it's a book of tricks or something, but he is a scientist, very serious scientist of Psi, and he discusses all of the experiments that they have done. He does a meta-analysis of all of these experiments that have been done in Psi, and I think it would be a very good good resource for you if you haven't already encountered it, or just look up Dr. Dean Radin, R-A-D-I-N, on YouTube, and you'll find lots of stuff. He's very much out there, and not out there like out there, but yeah, he's available to listen to. He's a very, very, very down-to-earth guy. Very interesting.
And speaking of books, where are the best places people can find your book?
Well, you can get it on the big old Amazon. That's the easiest way to get it. I think it's also at Barnes & Noble. I think the best price right now is on Amazon. It's like $9.95 for the book and $2.99 for the ebook. I'm always more of I like ebooks, but I prefer a book in my hand, just anybody's book. I like to have it in my hands. But yeah, so it's available on Amazon. Timeless. A paranormal personal history.
Got it. We have another. This is a question coming in. We've only got about another minute, so I'm going to run through this real quick. It says, I never had a sister, but along the way in life, good friends have become family to me. My dear, dear friend Penny passed away unexpectedly last New Year's Day from pneumonia. When her husband died a few years earlier, she would tell me that pennies would appear in the oddest places, and she felt strongly that he was close by. Now that she has passed, the same thing is happening to me. Truly, I never, ever found pennies before now, and now every couple of weeks, one will appear on the bathroom counter, in my closet, and 2 weeks ago, one was sitting on my nightstand. I've got to say, I did not believe in the paranormal before this, but I would think that I was losing my marbles if I didn't realize that something was happening. What is your opinion about these materializing things? And if so, how do you think this is happening? And this is from Gloria in Tennessee.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you, Gloria. Yeah, I've heard this before. those that have passed on, they want to do anything to try to give us a sign. And it's not always, you know, like clear spoken language or, you know, a message or whatever in a written form. It can often be symbolic. And sometimes things like that are very much the signals that they give us. So there is nothing wrong with it. That is a very clear sign to me that she's reaching out. And I would, if you would like to try to reach out back to her. And I think that would be a nice thing, kind of a healing thing to do for you. And, but it sounds like, and I've heard this before too. So this is, you're not crazy. This is, this is the kind of stuff that happens. In fact, I often say that the paranormal is really the normal. People have these experiences. They're just, they don't always talk about them, to just anybody. So, a lot of scientists are afraid to, because they don't want to lose their funding and their positions at colleges. And I understand that. But this happens more often than you'd think. But to me, I would say that's a very clear sign that she's reaching out. And I think that's wonderful. What a wonderful thing.
Yeah. It sort of gave me a little bit of a chill as I was reading it. Not in a bad way. It was just sort of, it was very touching. So Bruce.
Yeah. Very touching.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate this. I love what you're doing. And again, for anybody out there, if you want to get the book, you can go to the publisher's website, which is BruceOlivSolheim.com, or again, Amazon or whatever. If you're driving out there and you can't write any of this stuff down, you can always go to AnswersForTheFamily.com. We have all of Bruce's information on there. Bruce, I'd love for you to come back on.
Sure. I had a great time. It went very fast, Alan.
It sure did.
Too fast. Yeah. There's so many things to talk about. That's the thing. It's a big, big topic. And I just want to tell everybody, well, thank you very much for having me on. But, I have this motto, live forever, that based on the what my friend Gene said with timeless. And I also add to that love forever too. Live forever, love forever.
That is beautiful. I will, there are certain ways I sign off the show, but I think that's a beautiful way to sign off the show as well. So again, thank you, in regards to next week, obviously we're closing in on the holidays. So please put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday. And we're going to be joined by JJ Smith to discuss her new book, Think Yourself Thin. And if you get an opportunity, please visit our archives at AnswersForTheFamily.com. Or better yet, you can subscribe to the show through iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube. And remember, if you like what you hear, please leave us a review and share it with someone that you know that can truly benefit from that particular one. And again, know that it will help us greatly, that we truly appreciate it. And whereas I normally say, be good human beings, let's talk about just be timeless, be love, and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.